an example of that industrialization and centralization, just so the listeners are aware. We had 24,000 mills in the United States 100 years ago.
Wow.
24,000. In one county, I was back in Virginia when we started this business, visiting my mother, who's still in Rappahannock County, Virginia. And I was looking at these history books, and just that one county, I think there were 70 or 90 mills. And so that scenario and that situation was quite sustainable, and it kept the value there instead of exporting it. So the farmers were there, they grew grains that, you know, knew had disease resistance, that the millers want, the bakers wanted, that had flavor. No chemical inventions weren't around back then. So the farmer got paid, the baker got paid, the miller got paid, and all that value and jobs stayed in the community. It was a very sustainable system. Hard work, but sustainable. Fast forward to now, we have 186 mills in this country, to give you a sense of scale and centralization. So 24,000 to 186, those are mostly multinational companies. There's no local ownership. That value is exported. The farmers are put in the commodity chemical intensive system that has the issues we just discussed, and it's not sustainable. And so we've seen that in meat, we've seen that in coffee and all these other commodities. And what we're looking at is changing that system in the grain and flour industry.
Yeah.
And hoping to inspire other mills around the world too.
And when everything stays local, there's a real incentive to care for the earth at the same time, right?
There is. There's an incentive. I mean, that's who we are. That's what we have to do. Or we're not going to be sustainable here in the Skagit Valley or other places for another 100 or 120 years. And so it's essential for us and our future generations. And that's where we really align across demographics, across politics. I haven't found another business, another project, another initiative where there's more support from the whole spectrum of community than around farming, the environment, and clean food. And so it's incredibly gratifying to see that there's still a place where the community, despite political points of view, we all have something in common. We're pulling together.
I don't know much about the WSU Bread Lab, Washington State University Bread Lab. And a lot of people, Kevin, don't think of Western Washington with our wet, cooler climate as being a great area to raise grains. What was the relationship between the Bread Lab and the development of strains that could actually provide yields that could sustain a mill like yours?
Yeah, well, the Washington State University Bread Lab was pioneered by Dr. Steve Jones, who was breeding wheat in Pullman, primarily for, I think, Big Ag, and decided he didn't want to breed wheat for the Big Ag companies anymore. He came over here and was the director of the local ag, WSU Ag Research Station, and it's where he discovered that we were growing wheat here. We weren't even on the wheat production map that the USDA puts out. But we've been growing wheat here for 120 years as a rotation crop in between the other high cash crops like potatoes and brassicas and cabbage seed and spinach seed. Breaks those disease cycles, puts organic matter back in the soil, and it's really kept our soil some of the most top one half most productive in the world. It's one of the stats I've heard. And so as he started learning from the growers, he started experimenting with different wheat varieties and then test milling them and having them baked. And that's where this discovery happened. It's like, wow, wheat's just a grass. And there's over 30 or 40,000 varieties of wheats that can grow in almost any climate, which makes it great for climate resilience. It's low input. And so that's where it really started to take off. The port invested and built a separate building for them to move in. And they have a test kitchen. King Arthur Flour is located at a baking school there. And all of a sudden, the bakers from around the country were flocking there to see what the heck was going on. And they were really the catalyst for this. I always tell people the mill is not my idea. I just got lucky to raise my hand as the entrepreneur when the time is right. But the farmers were growing the grains, got in compensation. Steve and his team were doing the research, the breeding, the baking testing. The port was investing in the infrastructure. Companies like Patagonia were at the table supporting. Cliff Bar showed up and supported the Bread Lab. Our local bakers, Scott and Renee at the Bread Farm, were test baking and getting the word out. Chad Robertson was coming up from Tartine Bakery, which is one of the most famous, iconic bakeries in the country, in the world. So all of a sudden, we were the epicenter for innovation around grains and milling and baking. And they were really the catalyst.
So how did you get the business of Cairn Spring Mills off the ground? What was the process like?
Oh, yeah. Well, the overarching theme or story is it was like an old-fashioned barn raising because it took everybody's help. Steve Brand helped me raise a little bit of cash to put gas in the tank and the truck and provided a cubicle for me to do the feasibility work. I teamed up with Tom and Sue Hunton, who have Camas Country Mill, and they're really probably the first, they're a family-owned business. They're the first small mill that could operate at a more regional scale. They had their hands full with the farm, so they said they didn't want to be the operators, but they were partners. And so together we built the business plan. We traveled with port staff and Tom and Sue to Scandinavia to look at these regionally scaled modern stone milling systems. We decided we wanted the stone mill because they produce a healthier, more naturally nutritious flour than the modern mills do. Designed the mill, came back here, raised another small amount of money from investors like Patagonia and a few impact investors. And really, it was just the farmers were growing grains for us before we could pay them. A lot of trust. The bakers were test baking. They were helping us understand price points. They were helping us understand flour specs. I mean, really, and, you know, Melt Derbyshire down at Grand Central Bakery played a big part of that. So did Leslie Mackey. So did George DePasquale. Leslie, of course, is with Macrina. George is with Essential Baking. So they were all pitching in to provide us with the information, motivation, and inspiration to really help us understand if there was a business here. And it was beautiful. I mean, it was kind of like being back in the Italian community where it's like, hey, if you needed the fence built, if you needed plumbing fixed, if you needed, you know, something, somebody showed up and lent a hand and were part of the solution. And even the customers who we were starting selling to, they were getting the word out, Mark. I didn't have a sales and marketing budget until 3 years ago. And it was all by word of mouth. It was all from testimonials from the local bakers and famous bakers. And that's how it came into existence and how we've become successful right now. We're milling at almost max capacity. We're running 7 days a week and we have more demand than we can supply and we're getting ready to expand.
Wow, that's fantastic.
So, and it's all because of this team and this community. I've just been along for the ride, hoping to resource them, and I do what they tell me.
When I go to my favorite local bakery, the Cottage Bakery in Edmonds, the first thing that I noticed when I walked in the door is huge pallets of Cairn Spring flour. Give me an idea of the different flours you produce, Kevin, and how widely distributed they are now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we sell both organic and what we call regenerative conventional flours. All of our farmers use regenerative practices and techniques. We all source directly from them. We used to sell about 8 different products. We're focusing now on 6. And they fall into those regular categories of all purpose and bread flour, higher or lower protein. Yeah, one of them is called the Trailblazer flour, which was our first flour that we sent off the line. And that has become one of our top sellers, both locally and across the country now. And it's really designed to be a premium flour for sourdough baking because it can handle lots of fermentation and just has an amazing flavor, aroma, and color when you bake it.
Oh, that's fantastic. And how widely distributed, Kevin? Are you West Coast, national? How far?
We are primarily on the West Coast, but we are sending a truck a quarter to Denver, a truck a quarter to New York City. And then, oddly enough, a half shipping container of flour to Seoul, Korea, because Tartine had a business license agreement with an entrepreneur there, and they wanted to use the same flour. So we try to stick close to home. You know, 90% of our market is here between Seattle, Portland, and LA. And the idea is when we grow that we'll have other mills that are in those strategic locations and that they're getting flour, you know, regionally.